Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand. Created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So a lot of you parents are maybe a little bit more relaxed today with your kids in school now. And as the focus returns to learning, parents probably don't want their kids wasting time on MySpace. About 100 million people, mostly teenagers, while away the hours on that site and even more on other online social networks. But it's also been a more serious cause of concern for parents who worry about the risks of sexual predators on the net. Well, maybe parents would do better taking a second look at these sites as a learning tool. One school in Flemington, New Jersey, is doing just that. Hunterdon Central Regional High School relies on over 400 blogs in its daily operations, and its teachers use podcasting, wikis, and Flickr accounts with their students, all things that many parents never even heard of. Former English teacher Will Richardson led the push for this embrace of internet tools in the classroom a few years ago, becoming the school's first, quote, supervisor of instructional technology. He's now left his job as a teacher to help schools across the country do the same thing. He's the learner-in-chief of a company called Connective Learning, and he has a book called Blogs, Wikis, Podcasts, and Other Powerful Web Tools for Classrooms. And he joins me now to talk about how this works. Will Richardson, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
I don't think most schools have a supervisor of instructional technology position. How did you end up with that title at Hunterdon High School?
Well, basically, we were looking for a way to really get a chance to work with teachers to integrate technologies more on a one-to-one basis. And this was one way that Hunterdon Central decided to go. But really, there are a lot of technology educators out there now who are starting to work with teachers more in the classroom rather than just supporting kind of the network side and the hardware side.
So when you say Hunterdon High School uses 400 blogs, what does that mean?
Well, basically a weblog, for people who may not know, is just a new web tool that allows for really easy online publishing. And what I started when I was teaching English about 5 years ago was using blogs in my journalism and literature classrooms as ways for kids to publish their work and also to archive their work, kind of make digital portfolios of the things that we were doing in class. And so that's kind of grown and grown out into about probably a quarter of our teachers and students at some point or another will use one or more of those types of tools.
So, for example, I understand you had assigned the book The Secret Life of Bees by Sue Monk Kidd in your English class, and she agreed to take part in a discussion on a blog that you had set up for the book. How did that work?
Well, it was great. I mean, she was able to be at her beach house in South Carolina and pretty much follow along the conversations that we were having in class about our study. And at the end of it, she came in and gave my students just something that I couldn't have given them in terms of her knowledge and understanding, obviously, where the characters came from, what the symbols meant, the themes of the book, and all sorts of other information that I couldn't have given them. And I think that's one of the really interesting things with these tools, is it does allow us to connect to people like authors and other mentors and experts out there so that in many ways, you know, they might be able to teach our kids more than we can.
We also can take calls for Will Richardson here, who runs this consulting firm called Connective Learning that helps schools use social networking programs in the classroom. Parents, teachers, how do you feel about kids turning their fondness for MySpace into a tool for education? Do you worry about the risks of giving them more unfettered access to online chat rooms. Maybe there are some students listening right now off school or for whom school hasn't quite begun yet who want to weigh in. Let us know what you think at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or email brianlehrershow@wnyc.org. Let's talk about another tool, because it's not just blogs that you use. In the book, you talk about wikis, which are online articles that anyone can edit, like the articles in Wikipedia. It's wiki because anybody can go in and edit or at least suggest changes to those articles. You use podcasts and the Flickr photo tool. Let's talk about Flickr. How does that help high school teaching?
Well, I think, you know, Flickr is a place where people can upload photos that they've taken, and as with so many other of these social tools, they tag them with specific keywords so that basically, let's say, all of the pictures on Flickr that are about Somalia, for instance, connect, right? So you can search and find all of those pictures in a group. And I think from a teaching standpoint, that it's a great repository of potential content to bring into your classroom. There's all sorts of story starters that you can use with those photos. You can upload your own student photos up there so that they can, again, find other people who are taking pictures of the same types of content. And in the spirit of what is becoming a much more social web like this, I mean, those connections, I believe, are really important. And if we can connect around content, we can find other people who, again, might end up being our teachers or mentors or whatever else.
And how does a classroom wiki work?
Well, just as one example, I mean, there are lots of schools now that are starting to create basically their own texts using wikis, and those texts are created both by teachers and students collaboratively. I mean, let's say if you had a media class, we did this at Hunter and Central. If you had a media class that was looking for various examples of the types of things, again, that we're talking about in class, maybe it's propaganda or maybe it's the use of gender or whatever, that those students can be asked to start collecting annotative links within wikis and collaborate in that space so that you build basically a text around it. And that's been really successful, and that text kind of grows and evolves throughout the years. It's not something that just stops after 9 or 18 weeks when the class is over. It's something that can really be sustained throughout a longer period of time.
Though presumably once it's not required or going to be on the test, then most students will turn their attention to the next thing. So why is this better than the old technology? What is it called again? Oh, books.
Yeah, well, you know, I love books, and certainly, obviously, I wrote a book, so books have been a major part of my life. But I'm finding as I get more and more invested in these tools, and I just do want to mention that I've been blogging for 5 years, and my blog has turned out to be just an incredible learning tool for me. And one of the reasons it has is because, unlike books and unlike paper, it's searchable, it's archivable, it's very easily accessible. I can take content that I've created in those spaces and use them in different ways. Paper becomes just very kind of restrictive when it's just kind of passed back and forth. With these tools, you can publish widely. You can share your work in ways that paper and in some cases books just make it very difficult to do. So I think that there's a very expansive kind of way of looking at the use of these tools, and especially from the publishing standpoint.
Will Richardson, my guest on WNYC, former teacher at Hunterdon High School in Flemington, now what he calls the learner-in-chief of a company called Connective Learning. He helps schools across the country use internet technology in the classroom, and he has a book called Blogs, Wikis, Podcasts, and Other Powerful Web Tools for Classrooms. And Jenny in Fairfield, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jenny.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I'm worried that this business your guest is talking about is replacing substance with style. I think that children don't need less face-to-face communication. They need more. They need to understand and master face-to-face education as to being immersed further into cyberspace.
Yeah, I don't think that there's any doubt that face-to-face communication and interaction is still extremely, extremely important. But, you know, I would argue, and I think a lot of people are taking a look at this in the context of MySpace, actually, that a lot of the socialization things that kids did in, you know, when we were, I don't know what your age is, but I know I'm 40-something, and when I was growing up, it was easy for me to just kind of take my bike and ride to the park and hang out with my friends and socialize. These days, that's not the case. That's not happening as much. I have a 7 and 9-year-old, and I, you know, I find it very, even though I live in a very safe place, I find it somewhat difficult to think of telling them, yeah, that you can just go out and just make sure you're home by dark. So what's happening is they don't really have as much opportunity to socialize outside of school. And there have been a couple people, Henry Jenkins at MIT for one, Dana Boyd, another from, I believe she's from Stanford, who have kind of theorized that what kids are doing now is they're finding a lot of the socialization they used to do face-to-face, they're doing it online, because it's just it's much more difficult these days for them to be face-to-face outside of the context of school. And so I'm certainly not saying that face-to-face interaction isn't crucially important to their development. It absolutely is. But kids don't have as many opportunities to do the other types of socialization that adolescents go through. And I think they're finding that a lot of opportunities are online to do that now.
Any reaction, Jenny?
I think it's terribly sad what you said. I feel like we're giving them a very poor substitute. And it's up to our parents not to give in to the feelings of cloistering our kids from our perceived fears. There are a lot of bad things out there, but I think it's up to the parents to turn this around. I understand what you're saying, but I think it's up to us parents to change that situation, because it's so bad for our kids to be living that way.
Jenny, thank you for your call. Alex in Englewood, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alex.
How we doing?
All right.
I've recently signed on to MySpace.
Mm-hmm.
I came to a conclusion that if I can't beat them, I better well join them.
In other words, you're a parent.
Definitely, definitely. And it's funny that even because I'm on MySpace, my kids are teaching me that all their friends think I'm cool. And it's all my friends on MySpace are all their friends. So one, it also gives me a safe net, a safeguard to see what everybody's talking about.
Did you join as you know, your child's parent openly, or did you go underground for your identity?
No, they all know I'm their parent, and they all know me personally. And then when they see me personally, they say, "Wow, Alex, you're on MySpace. That's so cool." And so what I'm doing, I'm encouraging parents to get involved, to don't be like the old cliche, an old dog, you know, you can't teach them new tricks. If we don't learn some new tricks, we're going to be left in the dark.
Mm. Well, I guess you agree with that.
Alex, congratulations. I really think that, you know, it's a great idea that parents have to get invested in these technologies, because their kids are. And I would make the point, too, you know, there's a lot of things we hear that are bad about MySpace, and we read it in the media a lot. And certainly there are dangers there. I don't want to in any way minimize the fact that there are things that could get kids in trouble there. But I really think one of the issues is that who is teaching them how to use MySpace well?
Exactly.
I mean, it's not something that's a part of any curriculum that I've seen out there. And many, many parents, I think, don't really understand the social shifts that are happening on the web. So the more and more that parents can get involved in that, at least they can have conversations about these tools with their kids and you know, just let them know, look, you're basically creating an online portfolio when you start a MySpace site. And there have been stories now of admissions officers at colleges and employers who have been looking at MySpace sites that these people who are coming to them have developed, and saying, you know, why is there a picture of you there passed out on your couch? I mean,
right. So
all of the stuff that kids need to know about MySpace in order to do it well and safely are things that I think we should be teaching, and that parents need to get involved in those conversations as well. So great job.
Alex, thanks a lot for your call. Now, Will, you posted an entry on your blog that we saw that you would be talking with us on the air today, and you got one comment along these lines from a reader who expressed a funny concern. He said, "Be careful, too much positive attention on MySpace by adults, and no self-respecting teen will ever use it again."
Right. Well, I think that, we don't have to worry about that. If it's not MySpace, it's going to be somewhere else. I mean, the social tools that are out there, you said it yourself, there are, I think, 106 million accounts on MySpace right now, and they add somewhere in the neighborhood of 280,000 accounts every day.
And then, so when Alex's kids say, "Oh, no, Dad is using MySpace, I'm going to go off and find something else."
Right.
While they're saying, "Oh, isn't that lovely that you're on our site, Father?"
Yeah, right.
To his face.
You know, again, it's the whole concept of social networking that I think is really important for kids to understand. It's not necessarily the place. It's, you know, it can be MySpace or Facebook or wherever else. But someone's got to have those conversations with them and you know, make sure that they're doing it well.
Here's an email that says, I am a pastor in Manhattan, and part of my job is running the youth ministry program. I have found that MySpace is a great tool for ministry. It keeps the youth connected to each other and to me, is an easy way to post our activities and helps me know what the youth are up to outside the walls of the church.
Well, again, you know, if you want to connect with kids, and I say this to educators all the time, whether you like MySpace or not, you have to understand MySpace. You have to understand the type of communication that happens there. For most kids these days, email is for old people now. I mean, basically, they text on their phones, they IM on their computers, and they go to MySpace or other social networking places to catch up with their friends. And so, you know, if we really want to connect with them, and from an education standpoint, if we want to stop becoming more and more irrelevant in our kids' lives, I think, again, we have to look at ways that we can leverage these tools because, like it or not, there's great stuff that's happening on MySpace. There's over 1 million bands that have MySpace accounts right now. And if you want new music, you go to MySpace. Al Gore promoted his new movie on MySpace. I mean, it's a place where there's a lot of potentially good things happening. And again, the more that we understand it, the better.
So you're doing this as an educator. You did it at Hunterdon High. Now you're consulting schools around the country. And we talked on this program recently about a bill passed overwhelmingly by the House of Representatives called the Deleting Online Predators Act, or DOPA.
Right.
The bill would forbid publicly funded schools and libraries from even allowing minors to have access to social networking tools. And I gather there's a danger this could put a dent in your efforts to use them in schools if it's passed by the Senate and signed by the president. What's your take on this?
Well, it depends on some of the language in the legislation, which does seem to indicate that there might be some options for adult supervision or when used in educational settings. But the bill is so unclear that it's very difficult to really pin down how it's going to affect schools and libraries. But, you know, the way it's written right now, I think, is very just short-sighted. I don't think there's any real understanding of the educational potential of social networking tools like blogs and wikis. And even under this bill, some people are saying places like Amazon.com would be forbidden because you have to create a profile and you have to log in order to use it. So I think my own personal opinion is that this is more of a election year issue than it is anything else, and that if people really took a look at these tools, that we wouldn't be trying to block them or filter them. We'd be figuring out ways that we can teach with them and really, again, leverage them for learning tools because, you know, right now these are the tools that our kids use, and what a concept to make them help them use those tools well to learn.
By the way, how many years did you spend in the classroom as a teacher?
I taught for 18 years, and I was a supervisor for 3 years after that.
It's a good long time. What grades mostly?
Mostly high school. In fact, all high school, yep.
So after 18 years plus three as a supervisor, what do you think is the hardest part of being a high school teacher?
I think the hardest part of being an educator at this point is just time, is just having the time to really, you know, keep up with what your students are doing, with what the latest curriculum and technologies are. I mean, I always found that to be very difficult. And I think, you know, when I go and speak to other educators about these tools, that's one of the things that they always kind of say. They say, well, when do I have time to do this? You know, there's just not enough built into the schedules these days for students or for teachers to really do learning on their own. And that was always the most frustrating thing. I never felt like I had enough time to get to the things I wanted to.
Here's an email, and we have 30 seconds left, that says, I think it's wonderful to use the net tools in classroom, but I wonder if everyone is required to at least have their own computer at home. In the U.S. these days, every student has it.
No, and that is one issue. I think the latest statistics are something like 20% of kids in this country don't have regular access to the internet. And in a world where we can publish as easily as we can read, I think that's just almost a moral imperative at this point, that we get every kid connected on a regular basis. That's a great point. And a lot of this stuff is pretty much irrelevant without that.
And the digital divide.
Yep.
All right. Will Richardson calls himself learner-in-chief of his company, Connective Learning. His book is Blogs, Wikis, Podcasts, and Other Powerful Web Tools for Classrooms, published by the Corwin Press. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.